The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from the WGBB studios in Merrick, New York, this is Sports Talk New York.
From the studios here in Merrick, Long Island, New York, this is Long Island's WGBB, 95.9 FM, 1240 AM on your dial. We are Sports Talk New York, and the madness has begun, ladies and gentlemen. It is March. It is Selection Sunday. And we all know what that song means. It's time to talk brackets. I'm your host, Mike Winone, joined as always by the man we call Cappy, Chris Caputo. We have an enormous show for you tonight, two full hours. We are talking brackets. We have Brett Reed from Lehigh, Flynn Klayman from High Point, Scott Cross from Troy, Grant Leonard from Queens, Associate Head Coach Mike DiPaoli from Hofstra, Antoine Pettaway, Head Coach at Kennesaw State. And now, via our phone lines,
Let's get the guests in, Mike.
Another Chris Caputo, not our Chris Caputo, but Chris Caputo, the head coach at George Washington University in the A-10. They went 18-15 this year, lost a tough one to a tremendous St. Louis team in the A-10 tournament, hoping for an NIT bid. Coach Chris Caputo, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys, how are you?
We're doing great. Thanks for coming on with us tonight. We appreciate you giving us the time. I know it's a very busy evening for you, very busy time. We're just happy to have you.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, hoping to hear from the NIT, which would be great for us. It'd be 10 years since GW has been the NIT when they actually won the NIT in 2016 at the Garden. So went to the College Basketball Crown last year, which is a good step for us to be in the postseason. And now if we could get in the NIT, again, another good step. With, you know, ultimately, obviously, want to be in the NCAA tournament. So we're working to build it, but happy to be on with you guys.
Coach, give us a little bit of a background. You're from Elmhurst, Queens. You played basketball in high school at Archbishop Molloy for Jack Curran, correct?
I did. Yep, yeah, from Queens. Played at Molloy. Played at Westfield State in Massachusetts. And then was able to go and start my career as an assistant coach at George Mason University under Jim Larrañaga. I was there 9 years and then 11 years at the University of Miami, who's in the tournament this year. I actually played my wife's alma mater, University of Missouri, in her hometown of St. Louis. So a lot of rooting interest there in that game for our family. And then this is my fourth year, just finished my fourth year at GW and been in the business now 25 years, so, which is pretty cool to be able to survive this long.
All right, so you gave us a little bit of a background. Give us what it's like being a coach, whether it's, you know, assistant or a head coach, coaching in a Final Four. You did it with Jimmy Larrañaga at George Mason, shocking the world, and then again with Miami recently. Talk what it's like making that run.
Yeah, it's funny. I was at Miami. My last year went to the Elite Eight. We were up six on Kansas going in that game, and then eventually lose, and Kansas wins the national championship. Then I left. Miami goes to the Final Four the following year. I would have been really upset if I didn't get my Final Four ring in 06. But our experience in 06 was very different. We were really the first modern era mid-major team to make a Final Four. So it was really a surreal experience. It was not something that I thought, you know, we thought maybe it was even possible, you know, at that time. And then since then, you know, a lot of people have done it, obviously. The FAUs, the Butlers, the Wichita States, the VCUs, the Loyola Chicagos. I was actually at Miami when Loyola Chicago and Sister Jean beat us in the first round. They hit a shot at the buzzer to beat us in Dallas, and that was the beginning of their magical run. So it's what's great about the tournament. Those Cinderella stories, I think, are great, and obviously the greatness of some of the great players that are in the tournament, and teams. But I do think that's where you start to hear about, you know, less of those mid-major teams getting in the tournament. I think we lose a little something, with their, you know, Cinderella stories and the upsets. That's why people really, I think, tune in early on those first few days, you know.
Mike Cudone and Chris Caputo talking with the head coach of George Washington, Chris Caputo. Coach, you played six teams that are in the NCAA tournament this year. VCU, yeah. St. Louis, South Florida, Florida, McNeese State, and UMBC. Recently, Coach, you guys were up 21 at one point, 14 at the half against St. Louis.
I told him not to remind you that, Coach. I'm sorry.
it was a hell of a game. Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that that team and that game a little bit.
Yeah, well, you know, Josh Schertz is the head coach of St. Louis. is a terrific coach. Got a lot of respect for him. We actually played them twice this year. Both games, it was very similar. We were up 15 at their place. They came back, took, I think, a seven-point lead. We came back, took a lead, and we were up one with, like, under a minute to go. And then the same thing here in the tournament the other day. We were up one with 1:23 to go, and we fouled them on a drive. We may or may not have fouled them on the drive, but they went to the free throw line and made two free throws, and then we couldn't score to sort of end the game and get the win. But great team, really good system. I think fun team to watch. What's unique about them is they are the number one team in the country, offense and defensive efficiency. That is very rare. That's the making of a team that can win any game they play. They've been battle tested to some degree in our league. I think that maybe the one knock on them is, you know, for whatever reason, just the way their non-conference schedule worked out, they only played just a handful of really high quality, you know, top 100 teams. So they lost a heartbreaker to Stanford, literally at the buzzer. They beat Santa Clara, who's in the tournament at the buzzer. And then they played, I think, Grand Canyon, who had a pretty good year, but they didn't get any of those power games. Hard for them to schedule those games with how good they are, as it is with a lot of teams in our league. So, I like their matchup with, I think, Georgia. Mike White does a really good job at Georgia, but I do like their matchup there. And then obviously, a really good matchup potentially with Michigan in the second round.
Coach, you said you might have gotten fouled going to the basket. Looking at the next game, they got fouled. St. Louis, the next game is playing Dayton, and you know Dayton scores a basket late in the game. And I know you don't want the referees to be involved, but what is your view of that situation where a Dayton player runs on the floor and no technical foul is called?
Yeah, it's a really big mistake by the Dayton player, obviously. I mean, the only thing I would wonder, and I meant to kind of ask the question and go check the record books there on this, or the rule book on this, is in that situation, if it's under a second, do they always stop the clock, do they blow the whistle and really go check the time at that moment? And if that's the case, if they had already blown the whistle to check how much time was left, which I believe they probably do. Then maybe it's just like a technicality. Like, you really shouldn't have been out there, but the whistle was blown. I know Josh, just in his press conference, I heard him say that they were thinking about streaking, which, again, a lot of times what you would do in a low clock situation, imagine a team makes a basket with 2 seconds left. A lot of times teams might call timeout. But sometimes in that situation, the defense is more set, right? So a lot of times what we've talked to our teams about, in fact, we tried to do it at St. Louis, didn't really work for us. But, like, you tell your team, listen, if they score and there's 2 seconds left, player A, start streaking, like run to the rim. And player B, take the ball out of the net immediately while everyone's celebrating, step out and throw that thing the length of the court. And see if you can catch them before, like, you know, a timeout is called, like they assume a timeout's going to be called, before, the celebrating goes on all of a sudden. Now, you're streaking down the court, maybe you get a layup with no time left. So I guess Josh's point was maybe they were trying to do that. Now with 0.6 left or something, it would have been very hard to get that layup off. So, crazy, crazy scenario.
Once again, we're joined by Coach Chris Caputo from George Washington University and member of the A-10. And Coach, our Chris Caputo was asking you and mentioned your strength of schedule. And so as a coach, I just have a question for you. Obviously, with your program, you're looking to build your resume throughout the season and play these tough teams. Is this something that, you know, as you build your program at GW, that you're looking for each year is just to play, you know, tougher non-conference teams? Because I'm sure every night in the A-10 is a bear anyway.
Yeah, it's a great league. Yeah, I think, you know, when I first got the job, you try to build out a schedule that maybe reflects kind of where you are. We were, you know, 222 in KenPom when I got the job. We're like 83 right now. We got up to about 61, I think, at one point this year. So we made some strides there. As you get better, you want to try to schedule, you know, maybe for potential at large.
Sure.
And in order to do that, you know, you've got to challenge yourself in a way. You've also got to play very efficiently, you know, and that's another part of this thing is the way in which you play on both ends is important. But you do have to, like, you know, they talk about those team sheets where you have quad one, quad two, quad three, quad four games.
Mm-hmm.
You really got to have, in our league, it's really difficult to get those quad one or two games in the non-conference. You got to really try and really work to do that. So for us this year, you know, playing a McNeese, playing a Florida, playing a South Florida on neutral sites, if a team is in the top 100 of the net, then a neutral site game with that team is a quad two. If they're in the top 50, it's a quad one. So in a lot of ways, for teams like us, trying to find those games on neutral sites actually gives you a better opportunity to get them in a quad one or quad two game, whereas you might play that same team that's, let's say, 85 at home.
Mm-hmm.
You play them in a home-and-home. It becomes a quad three game.
Yeah.
I mean, the quad system is like kind of screwed up, but it's a challenge, right? It's a challenge to schedule properly in our league. And then your hope is that your league schedules in a way that allows you to get a certain amount of those games in your league. So for us, like, we go into the league after the non-con, we have St. Louis twice. We played George Mason twice. We played Dayton twice. We played at VCU, at St. Joe's.
St. Joe's, yeah.
You know, all of those games, you know, in and around the top 100.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you try to get as many as you can, but it's not as easy in our league to do it as it might be in the ACC or the SEC or the Big 12, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's great information. I had no idea that with the quad system that's how difficult it is. So just to follow up on that real quick, so how far out are you scheduled? Is your schedule done for next year already?
No, I mean, we have what you try to do, and again, this stuff is changing, but you try to get into one of these multi-team events. Mm-hmm. You know, that would be kind of one of the first things you would do.
Okay.
And you would, this year, again, we played the Cayman Islands, and you know, we got McNeese, we got Murray State, we got Middle Tennessee State there. Last year we played in the Virgin Islands with Kansas State, Louisiana Lafayette, and Illinois State, which wound up being a, you know, pretty good game, Illinois State, but and obviously Kansas State. We'll work towards that now. But the nature of that is changing as well, because a lot of the power, like, if you're, let's use St. John's and UConn, kind of the local teams in your guys' area, you know, like, if UConn plays Kansas in a home-and-home, they're going to probably make $1 million in that game at home.
Right.
You know? And so when you start talking about revenue generation becoming more important, the power teams are less likely to play in a neutral sort of multi-team event with the GWs of the world. Whereas, again, 10 years ago, you know, even 15 years ago when I was at George Mason, we were pretty good. Like, we played, I think one year in Orlando, we played, I believe, Kansas State, NC State, and South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you know, that's probably not going to happen anymore.
Yeah.
And so you're trying to balance, like, you know, and I think, you know, all of our fans have had to sort of understand this a little bit better in the past. Like, hey, why isn't Virginia coming to the Smith Center at GW anymore like they did 10 years ago? Hey, why isn't Miami? When I was at Miami, we actually played at GW. It's not happening anymore. Right. There's no benefit to those schools. So you try to be creative. You try to build out a strong non-conference with neutral sites and maybe potentially some games on the road at a Power 5, but even those games are few and far between for the A-10. We're even doing some exhibition. Like, we played Georgetown in an exhibition this year, and it was awesome. It was sold out. It was on our local, you know, kind of our local sports network, Monumental, as the Wizards and the Nationals, and you know, it was actually very well, viewed on that network. But again, getting that game as a regular season game from Georgetown, probably unlikely.
Coach, you played Florida back in December. They were only 6-4 back then. You lost 80-70. They're now 26-7. Obviously, one of the top teams in the nation. How do you beat a team like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a challenge. They have a very distinct style. I think you're starting to see in college basketball. They're huge. You have to rebound the ball. They just dominate the rim, right? They're defensively very difficult to score with the size that they have up front. With Chinalu and Condon and Hout, and then bringing, you know, bigger guys as well off the bench. Kind of like, you know, the game was small for a while. It's going back. It's sort of everything reverts back to a cycle where now being big is really important. So they dominate you defensively at the rim. Chinalu is an incredible defender. They keep the ball in the paint. And then offensively, you know, they dominate the backboard. I mean, they score at the rim and on the offensive glass. It's just such a high rate. At least back then when we played them, you know, we were trying to be selective with who we guarded on the perimeter and tried to, you know, maybe keep some people in the paint against the non-shooting just to try to protect the rim as best we could. Their guard play, Boogie Flan is obviously a New York guy, and Xavier Lee was at Princeton. At that moment, those guys were not shooting great percentages. So if you could get them in a half-court game and you sort of went under their screens and you tried to, you know, maybe see if they would take the bait on some mid-range shots and some threes off the dribble, and then if you could rebound, you might have a chance to have some success. I think we actually had a shot at the buzzer in the first half that would have tied at 33, I believe.
30-30, yeah.
And then 30-30, yes. It was low scoring. I thought our game plan was pretty sound in the first half, but they went on a big run. I think, like a 14-0 run or something like that, where, you know, we couldn't score at the rim. And then when they either block your shot or limit you at the rim, then it's really challenging to get back in transition. We always say all the time, right, turnovers, bad shots, but also missed shots at the rim where you have flattened out your offense and now allow them to rebound. If you miss those plays at the rim, it's really hard to have any sort of level of transition defense against a team that is lethal. But I think Todd Golden obviously is a great, great coach and one of the really great young coaches, right now. And as a national championship under his belt, I think he's got a chance to go get another one here.
So, Coach, I'm in my late 50s, and the NIT is something that I've followed for a long time. I've always loved it. It's a great tournament. I know that everybody these days it's the NCAA tournament or bust in some respects for programs. So, you know, we're definitely, you know, pulling for you, and I'm sure the NIT is going to come calling very soon. Is that something that with your guys that, you're going to have to get them up for, or are they just happy to be playing still?
I'll try to give them some history on why it's really important historically and to be a program like ours. It really, you know, was kind of on the mat 6 years ago to play in the NIT is a good step. The one thing that, there's nothing wrong, I think this year is really exciting because the Final Four is in Indianapolis and the NIT Final Four is in Indianapolis at Hinkle Fieldhouse.
Yeah.
So I think that's a motivator there. Now, when I was at Miami, we played in the championship game in the NIT and we lost to Stanford, really a heartbreaker. But, you know, back then it was, hey, if you get in the NIT, it's all about going to the Garden.
The Garden,
it's all about playing in New York and getting a chance to play in the Garden. I would love to see that get brought back to the Garden. No offense to Hinkle. It's obviously a historic building. It's where the real Hoosiers game was played. But I think that the allure of the Garden and a chance for schools like ours and others to bring their teams to New York, where they often, you know, most teams have so many alums, you know, in that area. So that's missing a little bit, but man, it's still a great tournament and a great opportunity to compete, and especially for the mid-major programs that seem to be getting shut out of the NCAA tournament. I think the NIT is a great opportunity to go compete against really good teams, get some wins, and then, you know, how cool would that be in Indianapolis for the Final Four of the NIT while the Final Four was going on? Really, really great experience for the players. So that's, if we're fortunate enough to get in, that's what we'll be trying to do.
And Coach, real quick, also, they pushed back the transfer portal opening up till after the NCAAs, correct, this year?
Correct, yeah, the weekend, I think, soon as the after the Elite Eight, so the 7th or something like that, yeah.
Okay, so that gives you a chance this year to hold on to some of your guys and let them play through that.
Yeah, it was strange last year because we played in the Crown and the portal opened up, but we were still playing, you know. It'll be a little bit more time, which is probably a good thing.
Last question for you that I have. Strategy, we talked today a little bit. Yale, twice up by 4 and 3 points late, decided not to foul, but called a timeout, gave the team a chance to set up. What's your strategy up three? I know you had a game with South Florida. You did foul this year.
First, I think James Jones, obviously one of the great coach, you know, what he's doing in the Ivy League, you know, he's starting to talk about, you know, the Dunphys and the Pete Carrills, that level of success in the Ivy League. So I would never question James's logic. And every coach is going to have a different reason at a different time in a different game. For me, I can just say, you know, I have fouled up three. This year we played South Florida. It was actually 11 seconds left, and that's probably too much time when you think about conventional wisdom. But I felt like South Florida was a great three-point shooting team, had not shot the ball well at that moment, and I was concerned that we talk about three-point variance, that three-point variance is going to go against me had I not fouled. We were able to execute twice fouling and win the game. Now, last year we played at American University, who was the NCAA tournament team. It was 14 seconds. We did not foul. It's too much time. We deflected the ball. Both our guy and the guy who was going after the ball for their team went after it. He picked the ball up, took like two dribbles. At that moment, I looked up. There's about 6 seconds left. I started screaming, foul. Place was loud. It was at AU. No one could hear me. It would have taken a tremendous amount of presence of mind for our player. He does not foul. Guy makes a three, and we go to overtime, lose the game. So, you know, afterwards, of course, people say, well, why didn't you foul? I said, well, you know, 14 seconds is probably a little bit too much time. I think that 7 second or below mark is sort of conventional wisdom. But again, I'm sure James had his reasons, and I know it's painful because when you make decisions, a lot of times your process is sound, but the result doesn't work out for you, and all of a sudden you're going to get questioned on those things.
So, Coach, again, we can't thank you enough for giving us as much time as you did tonight. We know this is really just a crazy time of year, but we're wishing you all the best in postseason. And we're pulling for you, and we're hoping next year when you come on with our Chris Caputo again.
We'll get you on. That's right. We'll be in the tournament.
That's it, without a doubt. And we'll definitely be pulling for you, as well as you being a New York guy. But all the best on a great season. You're doing a great job at GW, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Coach Chris Caputo from GW. And, Coach, it's funny, when he was hired at GW, and, of course, someone said to me, is that the guy that you know? And I said, that would be pretty cool. But it's really, you can tell, I mean, just talk. I learned so much in just that 15 minutes, number one on scheduling, which I had no idea about. I mean, I know the quad one deal, but he explained that so well. And number two, his strategy on coaching and different things. I mean, it was just for someone who's getting ready to go into postseason, I'm always amazed by these guys and ladies who are just, they're so composed to talk about their team, anything you want to talk about. God bless them.
Yep.
I'd be so nervous right now.
Oh yeah. And you know, we talked before, and like I've messaged James Jones from Yale back and forth, and he talks very highly of Chris, says that he's a good coach, and you know, James has been in the NCAA tournament you know, many times and does a really good job. So here, you know, I'm not here to question whether or not somebody makes that call, because he's done the right thing many times over. But it's interesting to hear people's perspective of how they go about scheduling, how they go about coaching, you know, what they're looking for in players. Yeah. You know, I think that's a good thing. And, you know, to have somebody, A-10 coach, these guys come on here and they just have a regular conversation with you, it kind of makes you know that these guys are out there. They're just doing the same as we are. They're just, their schedules are a little bit busier.
Yeah, and they're just trying to improve their program, you know, 1 year at a time. As every coach is on every level, no matter what you're doing. I wanted to ask him, and we didn't get to it, but he was mentioning the you know, playing these tournaments in the Virgin Islands, in the Cayman Islands. And I believe as this goes on each year now, while the teams are guaranteed, I think the players actually in some of these bigger tournaments are guaranteed some money as well.
Yeah, especially the one out in Vegas. So yeah, that would be interesting to.
I mean, they used to have one in Anchorage, Alaska. I don't believe that one's fielding any teams anymore.
Yeah.
Because, you know, why go to Anchorage when you can go to the Cayman Islands?
That's true.
I mean, they're having them in casinos. The one in Baja Mar down in the Bahamas.
Atlantis.
Yeah, they have them in these conference rooms that they make into basketball arenas. It's wild.
Yeah. Well, this time of year is great. I do think my thoughts on, I thought, I looked at the list and I selected all 68 teams that I thought were going to be in there. I thought St. John's could have gotten a higher seed if they were going to give people the benefit of the doubt based on how they did in conference tournaments. I thought St. John's should have gone up a little bit.
Yeah.
They didn't. Other teams maybe were affected by that. So, we'll have to see.
No problem.
All right. We'll do a quick.
We're very lucky to be joined for a few minutes here by yet another coach who's in the big dance this year from Lehigh University, the Patriot League champions, Coach Brett Reed. And, Coach, welcome to the program. Thanks so much for giving us a couple of minutes tonight. This is Mike and Chris in New York.
Hey, happy to be able to do it. It's an exciting time for Lehigh basketball. We're pleased to be able to advance in the NCAA tournament. So love talking to you.
Yeah, well, hey, listen, you beat BU 74-60 in the final. You're going to be now in the play-in in Dayton, but it doesn't matter. I'm sure you, whether it's in Dayton, out in the parking lot or whatever, you're just happy to be in the NCAA tournament and lead Lehigh, you know, to this bid.
Yeah, winning our conference championship is a really special feeling for us. The Patriot League is a renowned lead for academic schools, but there's also very good basketball. We had an opportunity to have a pretty dominant win, which is awesome. But it's also a story of a season where we got better. We were dealing with some injuries in the beginning of the year, which had us have a slow start. We were 4-11 at the beginning of the year, but our guys never lost faith. They never lost hope. They continued to pull together. And because of that, we ended up really building from there when we got a couple key players back. And that's why I feel like not only are we happy to have won our championship, I also feel like we're in a great position to potentially move forward in this NCAA tournament.
Coach, before we had you on, we had Coach Chris Caputo from George Washington on, and we were talking about scheduling. How difficult is it for you at Lehigh to schedule a non-conference?
You know, it can be a challenge at times. And, you know, our program has had some very high levels of success where we couldn't get anybody to come and play us, you know, and that can be a challenge, you know. We beat Duke in the NCAA tournament. We had a strong run, 21 seasons, and trying to get anybody to come to our place to play was an act of Congress.
Yeah.
And, you know, anything beyond that was a big challenge. You know, there's also a lot that goes into scheduling. You know, there's financial ramifications and things that we could do to support the athletic department. So, you know, you really have to craft your schedule the proper way. We continually test ourselves. And part of the reason we test ourselves in such a significant way is we just want to be battle-tested when it comes to league play.
Coach, you guys have four players that average double figures, including 21 points a game from Nasir Whitlock. Size-wise, you got Hank Alvey at 6'9". Are you worried about size? I know you got to play Prairie View A&M. Are you worried about size, or you guys have always seemed to handle that pretty well?
Well, anytime you advance in the NCAA tournament, some of the power conferences certainly have a lot of size, bodies, and athleticism, and that can present its own unique challenges. But, you know, I love the fight in our guys. I think we do have actually pretty decent size. Edwin Badois is a forward at 6'8". You know, we have guard play that's excellent. You can win a lot of games with guards. You mentioned a player that's outstanding, and that's Nasir Whitlock. Not only has he produced a lot of points for us, he's come in clutch in big moments, And he's also a very good ball distributor and has played the point guard for us, in addition to playing a combo guard spot as well.
So you're in the first four out in Dayton. Just tell us a little bit, are your travel plans already in motion? Has the NCAA, you know, talked to you about game times, or is it still too fresh? I mean, I know we're only, you know, an hour and a half outside of the selection Sunday.
No, it starts to unfold very quickly. The NCAA is very organized, and they're going to have a plan for us. We don't know our exact departure time, but I have been told they will want us to travel tomorrow despite playing Wednesday. They like all the schools in that host location so that way there aren't any hiccups or problems, and everybody's ready to go. But we'll be ready whenever that flight lands and it's time for us to get on, and then we'll get out there, get oriented, get situated, get familiar a little bit with the facilities and the surroundings, and be ready to play.
We're talking with Brett Reed from Lehigh. Coach, I don't want you to tear up, but you got to coach your son, Brendan, this year, and he able to get in there. What's it like being able to be a coach and a father at the same time?
Well, it's an unbelievable experience, and it has been very touching. So I appreciate you asking. Having a coach, a chance to coach your son is like a dream come true. We both love the game, and he's been around our program ever since he was a kid. You know, I've been here as a head coach for 19 years. I was an assistant coach 5 years prior to that. So this is the only home that he's known, and he bleeds brown. So having him be able to play for us, culminating with the championship his senior year, is incredible. But it also is really special because our family lineage. My dad was a coach in Michigan at a junior college and high school level. He won a national championship as a junior college coach. And, you know, it's just nice to be able to share. I know what basketball was for me and my dad, and it's so nice that my son and I can share that time together, share that bond, but also have him around in my life while he's a college student. How terrific is that?
Can't ask for much more than that. And if I'm correct, you've won your last six, so you're playing, you know, excellent basketball, getting hot at the right time. So going into the tournament, you know, is something that when you're playing this well is certainly a dream come true. You played some big schools this year. The NCAA tournament's a little difficult, but I'm sure for your guys there's no worry about, you know, size of venue, and the moment won't be too big for them.
No, I don't think so. You know, our first game of the season was out at Houston. They dropped a banner, you know, with the Final Four appearance, and the crowd was wild. Our guys have seen it, but you know, throughout the course of the year, they've really grown together. They've really believed in what we were doing, put a lot of trust in our coaching staff, and because of that, you know, I feel like we're in a great spot. We know that we're going to face unbelievable teams when you play in postseason basketball. Everybody's really good. Everybody's hot. There's a reason why they're here. But I just feel special. I feel that this is a special group just because their interpersonal connectedness, their love of the game, and how hard they have worked and fought together. And that's a true word, together.
Once again, Coach Brett Reed from Lehigh. And, Coach, before we let you go, just a quick question on game preparation. So you mentioned you'd be traveling tomorrow. You're probably, you know, looking at playing Wednesday. How much game prep can you do on Prairie View? I mean, I'm sure your assistants are going crazy right now, breaking down, and you have an idea at some point of who's in the tournament and whatever. But when you get on the court in a day or two, how much prep is it about the other team, or is it just getting your guys, you know, acclimated to your surroundings and humming on all cylinders for what you do?
Well, our coach is doing an outstanding job of advanced scouting, watching film, breaking it down, knowing tendencies, knowing actions. I have every confidence that our staff will be in a great position to disseminate the information to our players. And, you know, with a two-day prep, we've got a little bit of time to start getting our feet underneath us. So I'm going to be very invested in that process as well. You know, I feel like we can be one of the most well-prepared teams in the country. We take our pride in that to make sure that our guys are ready. But when it push comes to shove, you know, it's about execution. And at this stage, you know, there's going to be some surprises just because you're not as familiar. You haven't played this team three times or whatever it might be. But really, it's about us playing the best version of basketball and being ourselves. But, you know, we're not going to turn away any small competitive advantages that we might be able to gain through our insights, our hard work, and that commitment to preparation.
Well, I know there's a lot of days between games, but if you have any say in this, can you please let the Patriot League keep home court advantage for the higher seed in the playoffs? I love it. I had an unbelievable experience watching Navy play BU, and BU hitting a three-pointer from almost half court at the buzzer, and then you guys got to host the next game. I think it's very important. It gives your fans a great chance to be at a situation where they're watching your teams at home, because you earned it.
Well, it's really special. You know, there's a number of different slants that we could take on this. Our championship game against Boston University in Stabler Arena was absolutely electric. We had our community that could come out, support it. It wasn't at a distant location. It wasn't a few friends and family that were there. That place was packed. It was rocking, and it was a great celebration. But it also does this. It rewards the work that you put in for 2 months during your regular season. So, you know, you go to a neutral site, and it's just about who plays who and what that might end up providing as far as a small advantage. The team has to go on the road and win on the road. Well, that puts a great deal of priority. You could say pressure. You could say whatever you want for those conference games that take place even in early January or mid-February where you're in kind of the dog days. You got to be locked in because seedings do matter, especially when you have home court.
So,
fortunately for us, we were home the entire way through this playoff series.
Yeah, that's a big help. Just the last question before we let you go. You've been doing this a long time. You're obviously, you know, well seasoned and you know, excited about it. Truthfully, in the next 2 days, how much sleep are you going to get? I'm excited for you.
And, challenge.
Yeah.
I think we can sleep in another month when this thing's all done. Right now, I just want to do everything I can and squeeze every single moment to help these guys be ready for this opportunity.
Yeah, well.
And, you know, I enjoyed being able to talk about a great school like Lehigh. I mean, it's one of the top academic schools in the entire country with championship-level basketball program. It doesn't get much better than that, and I'm happy to tell everybody about it as much as I possibly can.
You have true student athletes, and that's pretty rare these days. And again, we can't thank you enough for giving us a few minutes. We wish you the best of luck out in Dayton, and we'll be pulling for you.
Absolutely. Thanks for giving me the chance to visit with you. Hope you have a great night.
Thank you. Coach Brett Reed from Lehigh. He's psyched, and he should be. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be coming back with even more coaches from March Madness.
Listening to Sports Talk New York. Tune in every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on Long Island's WGBB. Broadcasting on 95.9 FM and 1240 AM. Or listen live online at WGBBRadio.com. Stay connected to Sports Talk New York on WGBB by following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at WGBB Sports Talk. You're listening to Sports Talk New York on Long Island's WGBB. And now, back to the show.
And welcome back to our March Madness special here on WGBB 95.9 FM, 1240 AM here in New York, Sports Talk New York. And right now we're very happy to be joined by the coach of High Point University, Coach Flynn Klayman. They were the Big South champions, 30-4, took out Winthrop 91-76 in the final, and they're going to take on Wisconsin in the big dance. Coach Klayman, thanks so much for giving us a few minutes. Mike and Chris here in New York.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. So I know it's fresh. We're only, you know, maybe an hour and a half since the draw came out. You got Wisconsin. You had a tremendous season. I know, you know, while you're celebrating that, Your next couple of hours and next couple of days are going to be focusing in on the Badgers.
Yeah, for sure. You know, our guys will celebrate today, but come tomorrow, we're focused on trying to win a game here. So it'll be a tough matchup, but you know how March goes. Anybody can beat anybody, so we'll give it a shot.
Coach, give us a little insight into your team for people who don't know. Your school is down in North Carolina, beautiful campus. You know, what's the selling point for your basketball team?
Yeah, I mean, we've had a great offense. We're fourth in the country in points per game, 90 points per game. We're first in the country in steals per game. We're first in the country in point differential per game, beating our opponents by almost 20 points per game. So, you know, we do it on both ends. We really bother people defensively and force turnovers, and then we can score the ball. We've got some great pieces. We've got a mix of, you know, really good mid-major transfers that came in that were all conference at their previous spots, and a couple high-major guys who bounced down. And so just got an exciting team that plays fast and can score and force turnovers. So, you know, got a good group.
So I'm assuming anybody who likes to shoot the ball is definitely someone on your radar.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, we get up and down. We shoot the rock, you know, but we're not just a team that just relies on shooting. We're pretty balanced. We're, you know, we're top 10 most efficient offense in the country, raw efficiency, Ken Palm, for the third year in a row. So, you know, we get to the basket. We're one of the best 2-point percentages in the country. We play off 2 feet, get to the free throw line, you know. So a good efficient offense all around, but part of that's definitely shooting threes and transition.
One of the themes of our program tonight, coaches, we've had some other coaches on. We talk about, you know, non-conference scheduling, and for schools like yourself, is that something that's difficult? Have you kind of focused in more on the larger events where you can go and play, you know, certain people? Is it difficult? I mean, you're 30-4 this year. I'm sure that no one wants to come to your gym and play in a non-conference.
Well, it's not just our gym; it's in their gym too. Like, yeah. Can't get games. And people have their opinions about it. Like, I'll just say this, like last year we got in a multi-team event to try to play some high majors. When we got in it, one of the high major schools paid a six-figure amount to get out of the tournament. Like,
wow.
And it was an 8-team tournament. They weren't even slotted to play up. So like, fans saying like, the Miami, Ohio gets the most attention about it, like, because of the season they had, like, it's 100% true. You just can't get one. Like, if you look around at anyone who's between 76 net to about 125 net, it's very, very, almost impossible to get a game unless you have a personal relationship or someone's doing you a favor type thing. You know, like Wilmington couldn't get a game. Belmont couldn't get a game. Akron couldn't get a game. It wasn't just Miami, Ohio. We couldn't get one either. So it's very real now with the new net system. But, you know, here in March, we all get our shot at these guys.
We're talking with Flynn Klayman from High Point. They'll be heading out to Argonne to play Wisconsin. Coach, you played last Sunday. What's it been like the last week? Did you have any idea who you might be playing? I figure you probably thought you'd be a 12 seed. What was it like this past week in the preparation and getting ready to fly out there this week?
Yeah, it's kind of nice having the tournament early when you get the win. You got this week of this, you know, victory lap type week. But we practiced, just focused on ourselves, staying safe. You know, we didn't try to focus on any of the teams. We saw projections. We saw potential opponents. But we're a focus on ourselves type program. That's when we're best. You know, we scout and we do a good job scouting, but we're really focused on the things we can control. And those are going to be the difference in the game, you know. But we'll get to focusing on Wisconsin tomorrow.
Coach, you got three players in double figures, Terry Anderson, Rob Martin, Cameron Fletcher. But you seem to spread it out. You know, the minutes kind of get spread out amongst different people. You'll start different people. How deep do you think you'll go in the NCAA tournament?
I mean, we're a very deep team. Like, we can play 12 guys. And, I mean, for example, we got a guy who used to be a starter for Florida State coming off our bench, and he had 17 points and 19 rebounds in the finals against Winthrop. You know, Cameron Fletcher has played at Kentucky, Florida State, and Xavier. He's had a few injuries, but we got a guy who played in the Sweet 16 last year for Arizona and made a big shot against Duke coming off our bench, Conrad Martinez. So we got a guy who won a national championship at UConn coming off our bench, and Yusuf Shingari. So we can go into that bench. That's definitely a strength of our team.
Coach, you had a nice victory against Winthrop in the Big South Championship. You played them earlier, you know, obviously, February 21st, it was a 2-point game. What was the difference in those two games?
I mean, that 2-point game was an interesting one. You know, we were up 17 two times and kind of let it slip away where they came back. So, you know, they jumped us in the first game. I would say the difference is the first game that we played them where they dominated us. We were just really sloppy. We turned the ball over. That was our last loss, you know, way back in January. So we had the longest win streak in the country going into the NCAA tournament with 14th straight. But, you know, the game got a little more physical in the conference tournament, just the way it's officiated. And that has definitely advantaged us, how we force turnovers and our physical defensively.
Coach, what's the biggest thing that you're worried about as far as you know, playing a team of you know, Wisconsin size and ability and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is rebounding always. That's the biggest difference that you'll see. You know, last year we had a great game with Purdue. We were right there with them, you know, three-point game with about 6 minutes left going to the free throw line. And we, the difference in that game was we gave up, I believe it was 20 offensive rebounds. So if we can rebound the way we get out in transition and lead the country in fast break points per game, I mean, if we rebound, we're going to be able to score. So that's going to be the key for us playing against a bigger team.
And you found a way to win, 14 in a row right now. That culture seems to be there. So close games, do you think that you have the characteristics of different types of confidence with your group?
I do. I do. You know, we're 30-4 in the season. Two of those losses were one possession close games. So we lost our first two close games, you know, but we have had 24, I believe, double-digit wins on the season. So, like I said, we haven't had as many close games as your average team. Like we were winning by an average of 19.7 points per game, which is number one in the country. But we've won our last few close games. We had a close game in the semifinals against Asheville. We had a close game then season on the road against Presbyterian as a scrappy team. We had another close one against Charleston Southern in the regular season towards the start of it. So, we've been winning these close ones, and, you know, if we're going to win one in March, it's probably going to come down to the wire.
Coach, have you set up, or I mean, I know it's quick, but your travel plans are going to come together. Just looking for that first game, what does it look like in terms of on-court stuff, preparation, you know, getting your team to the hotel and all that?
Yeah, so since we're going across the country, to Portland, we'll be leaving tomorrow sometime. The NCAA will let us know what time our flight's out there. Before 1 in the morning, they'll let us know what time tomorrow. So based off that, we'll either practice here or practice there, you know, if it's too early in the morning. And we won't even work on Wisconsin tomorrow. You know, our staff will be working on
sure.
Wisconsin in terms of, you know, getting our scout ready. But we'll do our normal two-day preparation for a game starting Tuesday and then Wednesday. But tomorrow will be focused on us again.
Well, Coach, we can't thank you enough for giving us a few minutes. I know, you know, obviously, as we said, your preparation is in high gear. You'll be traveling tomorrow across the country. But we wish you all the best. You are a 30-win team. That is no fluke. That is by design for all your hard work, recruiting, and your team strength. So we wish you all the best. We won't say good luck because you don't need it. But we're pulling for you. Thanks for giving us a few minutes here in New York. And safe travels and good luck in the NCAA tournament.
Well, thanks for having me, guys.
It's our pleasure. All right.
Good luck.
See ya.
Coach,
bye.
Coach Flynn Cannon from High Point University. That is a wonderful, as you said, Cap, a great spot. You know, just a tremendous campus. I had a couple of my former students go down there. You know, we're just going to continue on here with the NCAA train. And right now we're joined by the head coach of Troy University, who hopefully we still have him, and we'll just double check. Okay, all right. Coach, we got so many people on tonight, but we had you on last night. We're so psyched to have you back, Coach Scott Cross. Thank you, Mike and Chris here in New York. Thanks for giving us another couple of minutes.
Thank you.
Listen, so you're a number 13 seed. You're going to play Nebraska, but let's talk about, you know, just how you got here. Victorious in the Sun Belt Conference, 22 wins. Beat Georgia Southern 77-61. You know, obviously, if you're winning your conference tournament, you're playing great ball at this time of year.
Yeah, we're very thankful. Obviously, we got the 13 seed. We knew we were either going to be a 14 seed or maybe the last 13 seed, and it worked out our way. I think Penn winning that last game over Yale helped us out. We know Nebraska's a very, very talented basketball team. They can really shoot the three. They're really good defensively. Not going to be an easy game, but none of them are, and we're excited to have this opportunity and look forward to playing them.
Coach, we had you on last year. We talked a lot about your players kind of up and down, but one of the things I want to focus on is one of the things that the Sun Belt Conference did this year is they gave a little bit of an advantage to the higher seeds. You guys finished 12-6 first place, and then seeds 2 through 7, I believe, were all 11-7. But you guys got basically like 5 byes to the semifinals, whereas other teams, in order to win, they were going to have to win on the 3rd, the 4th, the 5th, the 6th, the 7th, the 8th, and the 9th and win 7 games in 7 days. I actually think that this is something that smaller conferences might go to make sure that there's a better chance that their higher seeds move on to the NCAA tournament. Don't you think?
Yeah, I think it's genius. I love it. I heard, you know, a couple of the coaches complaining about it. But
oh, sure.
If you really want to, if you want to reward the regular season and protect your best teams, this is the way to do it. The way we had it 2 years ago was the top two seeds had buys, but there was a day in between. So those other two teams already got their jitters out. They've played in Pensacola Bay Center. They get to rest and they get to prepare. Now the way it's set up, there's really no advantage for the lower seeded teams. They're at a big time disadvantage. You know, I feel for them, but that's why the regular season is the regular season, and it matters. Every game in the Sun Belt matters. Now it does make it tough when you do have a four way tie. Like last year, we were a four way tie for first place. We were the third seed. We were able to get by. No number one or two seed, I believe, has won the Sun Belt tournament. So that was what they were saying, is that, you know, it hasn't happened, but I like the position we were in, being able to rest and just, you know, focus on preparing for maybe one or two teams versus preparing for everybody. Georgia Southern definitely probably was run down. It was their sixth game in 6 days.
Yep.
Credit to them for how hard they played and for being able to win that many games and back-to-back days. But it worked out the way it's supposed to work out. You know, and again, I think Commissioner Gill made a great decision. The coaches did vote on it. And I think, you know, if you're the top team in the league, you would definitely want it that way, or even the second place. It does get muddy when there's a bunch of ties, but that's part of it, and that's why the regular season really does matter.
Coach, last year we talked, you had the Conference Player of the Year in Tayton Conaway. You brought back Thomas Dowd this year, Cooper Campbell. Last year you played a schedule at Arkansas and Oregon and Houston, and we talked a lot about, you know, how that helped your team. You guys are a really tough physical team this year. What do you think your strength is this year? You know, I know you have some new players coming in. Last year you had maybe a 9 to 11 man rotation. Where are you at this year and what's your strength?
Yeah, we're probably about 8 to 9 right now. I would say our strength is our team chemistry. Our guys absolutely love playing for each other. They're really, really connected. If you watched our semifinal and final game in the Sun Belt tournament, we were about as locked in defensively as we've been all year long. We did that against Akron when we beat them at home, and, you know, maybe that San Diego State game, the USC game, but it was really great to see. Our guys kind of had that look in their eyes that they weren't going to be denied. If we play with that same type of defensive intensity, we'll have a chance against Nebraska. I know they're a dynamic offensive team and a dynamic defensive team, and it's not going to be easy, but, you know, we played two, preseason games. We did a close scrimmage against Mississippi State, and then we did an exhibition game against Georgia, and that was specifically to get our guys ready for this type of environment, for playing bigger, stronger, more physical teams. So, you know, before we played anybody, we had already played two, you know, SEC level opponents that have been good, and, you know, Georgia's in the tournament, and so I think it definitely helped prepare us. And then the San Diego State win gave our guys confidence. You know, they were one of the last four teams out. We beat two teams that are in the tournament, and Akron and Furman.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think our guys have a lot of confidence and know if we play our best basketball, we'll have a chance to win.
Coach Scott Cross from the Troy Trojans, number 13 seed, going to face Nebraska, joins us on the program. And Coach, your last game was on March 9th, and you're going to be playing Nebraska on the 19th. Is there any worry about a 10-day layoff? Is there anything that, you know, concerns you, or at this time of year, is it just something that's actually, you know, a benefit to get everybody healthy and kind of focused?
Yeah, I think it's a benefit. I mean, we've been able to have some time where we can just go over some of our offensive plays and get a little bit better at that, work on our skill, and just focus on us getting better. You know, we've done enough, I think, to keep our guys physically in the right place. And, you know, there's throughout the year, you're going to get beat up. And so it's nice to have a few days where they can recover, and hopefully we'll be 100% going into the NCAA tournament.
Coach, I always love to look when the times and stuff, you probably get it before we do, but I just see that you guys are going to be playing Thursday at 12:40, which is the second game. TCU, Ohio State will be the first game on TV. Is there any of that jitter that there hasn't been that upset yet that you guys go out there the early game and maybe you can be that first team to make March the madness that it is?
Yeah, I mean, you're so anxious on you know, the day that you play. So for me, the earlier the better. I probably won't sleep the night before, and I'll be ready to go. And yeah, I mean, what a great opportunity. This is what March Madness is all about. You know, I'm super fired up that the mid-majors, you know, still have an opportunity to go out there and upset. I know there weren't hardly any last year. And so hopefully we're one of those teams that does it this year.
Well, Coach, you obviously have done an amazing job taking, you know, Detroit job. Your first year, you went 9-22, and then, you know, you've been consistently a 20-win team over the last 4 years, and you're not sneaking up on anybody. But I'm sure anytime you can get to the NCAA tournament, especially for your guys and your coaching staff, it's an exciting time. So, you know, before you head out, the school going to give you a big send-off? Is it something where it's just kind of like a business trip? I mean, is it a combination of both for you as you leave campus and start to travel?
Yeah, I mean, send-offs aren't important for me. I mean, I think we got to celebrate enough in Pensacola when we cut down the nets, and then during the regular season, my boss, Kyle George, and his staff, they had confetti cannons set up, and so we got to cut down the nets at Trojan Arena, and so yeah, we'll just practice these next 2 days, be ready to go, and yeah, it's straight business from here on out.
Coach, what's one thing that you learned from last year that you're going to take to this year?
Trying to keep our guys focused on blocking out all the distractions from, you know, agents being in there, DMs, trying to convince them to go on the transfer portal, thinking about money, thinking about stats, thinking about, you know, girlfriend, mom, dad, just thinking about tomorrow, like not worrying about anything but right here, right now. When we do that, we're pretty good. And, you know, it's up to me to try and get them focused. We were not focused to the level that we needed to be against Kentucky last year. And I think our guys have learned their lesson, and I think they'll be locked in for this game.
Coach, you said there's a lot of chemistry amongst the players. What's one thing that fans might not know about your team?
Well, we have two brothers on the team that are called the Red Mambas because they both have red hair.
The Campbells.
And their dad is on staff as well. He's also a Red Mamba. Their little sister may be better than all of them, and she's a Red Mamba. And then their mom played at Oregon, and she may be the best player in the family. So, and their brother is the head women's coach for TCU, who's done an amazing job there at TCU. So that's a pretty interesting fact right there.
All right, last one from me. What's it like to coach your son?
So it's been an ongoing learning process. I'm harder on him than anybody else on our team. It's been awesome this year. He's in the rotation. He's like our eighth man right now. He scored 4 big points in the semifinals and played great defense. He had 5 points in the championship game and played amazing defense. We had him on their best player for, you know, the majority of the time while he was in the game. We are able to separate basketball between the lines from when we come to the house and we're eating dinner together. We're able to be dad and son then, and we've both done a tremendous job just, you know, being dad and being son and not letting what happens on the court affect us. But yeah, it's special to have him on the team and helping us win. Makes this, you know, journey even more fun for us.
Well, Coach, we can't thank you enough. You know, again, this is your second year joining us. You have a big contingent here in New York who's pulling for you. And again, you don't get to this time of year without being a solid team. 22 wins, 23 last year, and you talked about everything you need to do to prepare and focus in and what you learned. And we appreciate all the information. We'll be watching you, and when it comes 12:40 and the ball gets tipped off, hopefully you'll be part of the madness that is March Madness. And Coach Scott Cross, good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Coach.
Absolutely. So we're going to take a very quick break here on WGBB Sports. Normally we are a 1-hour show, but we're 2 hours of the madness here on 95.9 1240 AM.
This is WGBB AM 1240 and W240 DF FM 95.9 Freeport, New York.
And you hear the squeaks on the court. You hear the trumpets blaring. That is NCAA March Madness. And we're here for the second hour. You know, just kind of looking back over our first hour, Coach, we were talking about, with some of these guys, you know, getting sleep, preparation, whatever else. I mean, I'm jacked up and just being able to talk to these guys in this time of year. And, you know, my coaching season ended a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, I think back to when my first year as a Division II assistant coach with the men. And we went not into the NCAA tournament, but we started in October and we went, you know, pretty deep into mid-March for some postseason. It's a long grind. And, you know, they have to travel and all the distractions that Coach Cross was talking about. I didn't think about all that stuff that now, you know, you're talking agents and families and, you know, people trying to get you to transfer it. And when you're Troy University, this is not, you know, Michigan and this is not Kentucky, you know, your team, although those teams get raided as well.
Yeah.
I'm sure he tries to keep them, you know, in these hotel rooms focused in, and almost on lockdown.
Yeah, that's got to be a difficult situation when, you know, you're in a situation where your players are trying to play for you, but at the same time, there's other people trying to get them to come for them next year, and there's a lot of money being thrown out there, especially guys, you know, that have a year or two left of eligibility. They're going to try and steal them with, you know, whatever donors are going to give to them.
So, fan question for you. I have my own thoughts on it, but I'm curious what your thoughts are. So with these teams, you know, changing personnel so much, and there's the best players were going anyway after a year or two. But now, you know, these teams seem to, for the most part, have a different identity, especially the big-time ones, every single year. Does that take anything away from your experience of watching this tournament? Or are you just like, hey, whoever's on Kentucky, it's Kentucky, and it doesn't really matter?
It does change it a little bit. I like watching the games, but at this point, Mike, these guys are paid players.
Yeah.
You know, these are not, you know, amateurs. These guys are paid players, and it does change it a little bit. And that's why, you know, I think there's a chance for the upsets to still happen at the, you know, the 13-4, the 5-12, the 6-11. But I think when it comes down to getting to the Final Four, I don't think you're going to have a team make these crazy runs of four games. You know, I still think you're going to have chalk in the finals. You know, again, is St. John's as a five seed a sleeper? I guess, you know, they could make it. But I think for the most part, Mike, you're looking at teams that are going to make it are the ones that are supposed to be there. But it does change the way I watch the games a little bit.
Yeah, so the you know, the George Masons of the world that we were talking about in the first hour who – you know, came out of nowhere, mid-major. Even if you have a team kind of do that, they have people on their rosters that have been probably on a Florida State, excuse me, or on you know, a big time. There's no unknowns anymore.
Yeah, I think at this point everybody has a way to get film on people. They know who the big players are, and you know, Mike, the assistant coaches have such a big role now to be able to go out and, you know, grab this stuff, but. You know, think about years ago, and I say years, probably 20, 30 years ago, the assistant coach's job was driving 3 hours to go get a VHS tape that had just been dubbed, bring it back, look at it, make a scouting report, and then go about, you know, preparing for that game. Now it's, you could pull it up from everywhere and you could, you know, use huddle to make, I only want three pointers from the left side of guys, you know, who have taken more than 33 pointers. Like you could break down everything to the smallest little statistic.
Yeah, that's a great point because they, Danny Hurley was interviewed after the, you know, tough loss last night to St. John's, and he mentioned and something that I had read in his book, ironically enough, about, you know, how they handle the loss in the Big East tournament. And he said, "Well, we're just going to sleep on it tonight, and in the morning we'll watch the film, you know, just the possessions and kind of get out of town. And he was very, you know, I don't want to say nonchalant about it, but that's what they do. I mean, it's not like they have to have someone splice the tape. I work in the summertime for Ron Alfieri. In fact, we had him on last year, and he was one of the first assistant coaches for St. John's for Lou Carnesecca. And one of the first things he did was buy a VCR.
Yeah.
If you remember this story. And he had to literally, you know, stay up at night and splice and do these things. I mean, now with the computers, it really is amazing how you can just, with the touch of a button or even using your voice, do that. And it does change it. But the pressure that are on these assistant coaches, because they're looking 2 and 3 games ahead. So everyone's assigned a team. You know, I can tell you from, talking to our coaches last year and just from my own experience, in a tournament setting, if you have 2-3 assistant coaches, everyone has the matchups and is going out. And if you make a mistake on a scout, you feel it for a long time. Quick personal story. Back in 1994, I'm a 25-year-old assistant coach for legendary Frank Morris, New York Tech, and he sends me out to scout Philadelphia Textile with Herb McGee, who's a Hall of Famer. And he says, I want a scouting report, and this is my first one. And I'm nervous as all get up. So I go out, I write down literally everything possible. I come back, I give the report, we go, and we just get smoked, right? Absolutely smoked. And in the post game, you know, and I understood why he did it. But coach dressed me down pretty well to the team, saying, you know, oh, this scout, and it was a way of him, you know, deflecting some of the thing off the players. But also after the game, a lot of them came up to me and they said, oh no, coach, you gave us a great scout, and I was a little hurt at the moment.
Yeah.
But you know, at the same time, I was like, well, this is what it's all about. And you know, head coaches, they have a, you know, 50 things to worry about, and the scout really is one of the last things. And I can guarantee you one thing, I got a lot better at scouting after that game.
I'm sure. this year, we have a lot of New York teams in there. We have, you know, Siena making it back for the first time in a while with Jerry McNamara. We have LIU Brooklyn with Rod Strickland and the NEC. We also have Hofstra, who, you know, hopefully we're going to be talking with one of their assistant coaches in a few minutes. So there's a little bit of a New York blend. St. John's, obviously, would be the big one.
Yeah, very impressive win for them yesterday. You know, and on a nice run. Definitely looking at their performance throughout the year, they had one of the worst shooting games in the history of Division I college basketball. You know, late in the season, and then came back and really started to turn it on. So it just goes to show that your opponent has a lot to do with it. But you know, at the same time, you know, you can make little adjustments, and then all of a sudden you're flying high come mid-March.
All right. We are joined on the phone by the head coach of Queens College from North Carolina, Grant Leonard. Grant, thanks for joining the show. Mike and Chris here.
Hey, Mike and Chris, thanks for having me, man. What an exciting day.
Man, this Mike and I are really stumped, you know, we're stumped for words sometimes, but this is a really great story. First year of eligibility to make the tournament, and you guys did. It's got to be really exciting for you.
Yeah, you know, and when you start the transition, man, you learn a lot, and, you know, you have a plan to try and get there, you know, when you're first eligible, but it's really hard to execute, and, you know, things got to kind of fall your way, and, but, man, we have a great group of kids, and really bought in, and they did an unbelievable job.
You took over as the head coach in 2022 after several years as the associate head coach. You transitioned to Division I. That transition to Division I competition, how do you think that experience helped shape the identity of your team now heading into postseason play?
Yeah, that first year's team, man, they were phenomenal. And, you know, we went 30-4 the year before in Division II, and we got upset in the Sweet 16 on a buzzer beater. And our best player grad transferred to Murray State, and guys 2 through 10 stayed. Mm-hmm. And so we basically took a Division II into Division I, and we won 18 games. Really proud of that group. But by the end of the year, we were wore down and tired, and we were the second smallest team in America. And, through this transition, we've definitely changed our positional size, so that we got a team that could still be getting better in March.
Coach, you won 21 games this year, and in your conference final in the A-Sun, you win 98-93 in overtime. You hit 16 threes in the game. You know, just to add to the excitement of this time, have you been able to even take a deep breath and realize what you guys have done?
Yeah, I probably took a couple, but I mean, it's been awesome. I don't know if I've gotten enough sleep, but man, our guys these last 2.5 months have been averaging about 89 a game. We've really been scoring it, and they share the ball. We have six guys in double figures, and the only other two teams in America that have that is Florida and Miami of Ohio. So pretty good company this year.
Coach, one of the themes we've had a bunch of guys on tonight, we've been very lucky, who are going into the tournament from some mid-majors. And one of the themes I've spoken about is scheduling. As a first-year eligible for the tournament, Division I team, but obviously here, you know, you're making a big splash. How difficult was non-conference scheduling for you this year, and what do you anticipate going forward?
Yeah, it's never – people get worried about playing us because of the threes.
Yes.
But we did play five Power Four teams, and I thought that was a huge learning lesson for us going into conference. We started off conference 7-0, but we played Wake Forest, Arkansas, Auburn back to back right before conference season, and I thought that those lessons we learned in those games got us a lot better and prepared for conference.
I can't thank you enough for saying that, because I'm a high school coach. I came from the Division II level. But we play a very hard schedule going into our conference, and all the kids on my team are like, what are we doing? And I'm going to play this for them come next year, because it that experience, like you said, is invaluable. And when you're going into your conference, not that it, you know, all of a sudden it's easy, but just learning the lessons about your team and the level you need to be on to get into the position that you're in.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. When you have an older group with some veteran guys, I think you can do it. If I had a really young team, I probably wouldn't schedule so hard.
Yeah.
But I also think that you wouldn't have to schedule so hard too, because I mean, honestly, the better you get, it's really hard to get big games.
Yeah, but you still got in Arkansas, Villanova, Wake Forest. You know, teams like Furman, Duquesne. You know, I think that leaves your school and your players with a lot of balance and understanding that there's going to be some games that are a little bit tougher, and there's going to be some games where maybe we blow a team out and other guys can get in. How do you balance developing players long term while still trying to compete at the Division I level on a daily basis?
Yeah, and our program is entirely based on development, and our goal is to get 1% better daily. And everyone that's on our boat is rowing their oars in that same direction. Let's get better today as an individual and as a group. And so, you know, if you watch our practice, we probably do half of our practice is skill development. And it's through the concepts and stuff that we do. But I just really believe that I'm not that good of a coach. So at the end of the year, I'd like to have better players. And it really does make a difference.
Coach, I got to congratulate you on something. This week, you made a little news about calling out an SEC assistant who was sitting courtside at your game. I love that. You know what? The truth is truth. And the fact that you did that speaks to, you know, unfortunately, that what's going on in college basketball these days. But also, you're like, hey, listen, you know, don't poach my guys.
Yeah, and look, I embrace the portal and the fact that guys will have opportunities to make life-changing money. But there's a right way to do things and a wrong way.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And as coaches, we have to have ethics. We're leaders of men, and we're trying to develop young men and to go into the world. And you got to do the right thing. You don't need to be sitting courtside trying to interact with my player in an elimination game when you could just sit up top.
Yeah.
Okay. And there's a right way to do things. There's a wrong way. And I, whether they get mad or they called me a whiner, I don't care. Just do the right thing.
I think you did, by far, you did the right thing, and calling that out. I mean, there's a lot of ugly sides to college athletics, but yeah, I mean, just sit up there. You don't have to sit. It's like, what are we, AAU recruiting, sitting in the front?
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be crazy.
Yeah.
So, Coach, today Purdue wins the Big Ten, and that's your matchup Friday, 7:30. What's it like between now and Friday night to get your team ready?
Yeah, today we practiced after the selection show, and it was really exciting. Queens did an unbelievable job with it, and then up pops Purdue, and Purdue's been one of the top five programs in the country the last 5-6 years. I mean, Coach Coach Painter's done an unbelievable job. And the Big Ten is so big and physical, and they might be the biggest of all of them. And we're going to have to do an unbelievable job on the glass and in post defense to keep them away from their spots. But what an honor to coach against Coach Painter and the national stage that our guys are going to get to play on.
And what a great storyline. I mean, you're talking about your school is about 1,500 students, if I'm right, and you're talking about going to against Purdue, 57,000 undergraduate students. I mean, it's not really, I mean, in terms of a David and Goliath story, yeah, I mean, that's a great thing. But, you know, it's just five-on-five on the hardwood, and I'm sure you wouldn't want it any other way.
No, and we're not there to smell the roses either. We're going there to knock some heads, and we're going to show people what Queens basketball is all about.
Coach, the championship, you went through Austin Peay, the two seed and the number one seed Central Arkansas. It's got to feel good to beat the best and make your way to the NCAA tournament, correct?
Yeah, and you know what, though? I really believed in our team. I thought our team was built for 3 days and three games back-to-back in March. I didn't think there was much talent difference between, you know, we're the three seed and they're the ones and two seeds. It was very, very close. But we had better depth, you know, six guys in double figures and seventh really close. And I thought as that tournament wore on, our depth showed through and we were able to get through it.
So, Coach, last question before we let you go. Is it sweater or suit for the game?
Oh, there's no doubt it's a sweater, man. No, come on. St. Patrick's Day, I'm Irish, man. We're gonna rock an unbelievable sweater.
We are looking forward to this.
That is fantastic. Good for you. Well, listen,
enjoy
a pleasure.
St. Louis.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure having you on. We can't thank you enough. Wish you all the best and keep being you and keep just like you said, just keep rocking it at Queens.
Thanks, man. Go Royals. I appreciate you guys.
Absolutely. Right. Our pleasure. That was Coach Grant Leonard from Queens University of Charlotte. 1,500 students, first year of D1 eligibility, and going up against Purdue. And we had spoken, Cap, a little bit about local flavor.
Let's keep it going.
Yeah, we're very happy to be joined by Associate Head Coach from Hofstra University, Coach Mike DiPaoli, and the Hofstra Pride are going to be playing Alabama this coming weekend. Coach Mike and Chris here in Merrick, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, guys, thanks so much for having me on, man. Appreciate it.
It's our pleasure. You know, I'm a Hofstra alum. I went to grad school there, spent a lot of time. High school coach, my teams have played on that court. Hofstra's like a second home to me. And for us here on Long Island, we're just really happy and psyched to see you guys where you are, and great, you know, victory over Monmouth in the championship, and obviously a lot of emotion between, you know, yourself, but also for Coach Speedy Claxton.
Yeah, I mean, it was, I think obviously, you know, this place means a lot to Coach Speed. He's been here, been a part of it, you know, from the foundation, from time with him and Jay Wright when they first started building this thing. And a lot of people are like, well, he's been the head coach there for 5 years, but it's been 25 years since Hofstra's been able to get back to the NCAA tournament since 2001, and which was Speed's first year in the NBA. And it's been a lot of close calls. You know, in 2006, Tom Pecora's team gets robbed. When we had Charles Jenkins here, when I was here earlier, we couldn't break through. They do break through under Joe Mihalik in 2020, and then COVID happens. Mm. You know, 2023, we get upset in the semifinals to Wilmington in overtime. And then, so again, it's such a proud program. I think his emotion wasn't just for the last 5 years since he's taken over a coach, but it's been the last 25 years for all the people who have tried to get there, players, staff, administration. So, you know, the university super excited. We're super excited. And I think it's such a cool story with Speed being the head coach.
Coach, you guys, you had a huge win at Syracuse in early December, and I'm sure that seems like, you know, eons ago. But was that something that, you know, early in the season where you go up to the Dome, you win the game there, even though Syracuse didn't have a great year, that it really just kind of, you know, showed everybody that you were ready to play with anybody in the country?
Yeah, you know, I'll be honest with you. I think our guys we're a confident bunch. We're one of eight teams in the entire country that hasn't lost a game all year by double digits. And listen, I don't want to jinx that. Alabama can score a lot of points, and score a lot of points quickly. But my point in saying that is, for us, I think it really started when we went down to Central Florida. And they're a really good team. You know, they're an at-large mid-D NCAA tournament. We lost by four at third place in a really hard-fought game. Mm-hmm. And I think it just kind of gave our guys a lot of belief, you know, how good we can be and how good we're capable of being. So I think it started there. And then, we obviously winning at Syracuse, winning at Pittsburgh. Those types of games give you a lot of confidence from this time of year, you know, in terms of going against high major size and athleticism and having success against it. And we schedule a little bit different than some other mid-majors who, you know, just try and play a lot of like opponents. We're, you know, big believers in let's go get better. And if you look at our strength of schedule in our non-league, it's typically towards the top of the country every single year. And this is why, you know, iron sharpens iron, and we want to be the best versions of ourselves. And we feel the best way to do it is schedule games like Syracuse.
So Hofstra will be dancing this year. We're talking with assistant coach Mike DiPaoli, who's under Speedy Claxton. You guys have made the run, won the tournament, had yourself a good season. The CAA has changed a little bit. You've added some teams. You now have Stony Brook in the conference. It's now a little bit more of a coastal athletic conference. The competition is still pretty good, though, so you guys got to feel good to come out on top in this conference.
Yeah, you know, our conference, depending on what site you look at, there's 33 conferences in the country, and we're ranked 15 in some, we're ranked 16 in others. So my point is, we are the definition of a really good mid-major league. So, yeah, you know, it's a tough league. We had a little tough stretch in January there. We lost a couple in a row because of injuries. And quite frankly, we've been a really good defense and rebounding team, but we had a stretch there where we weren't great. I think our record this year is we're 21-1 when we hold people under 70 points. And, you know, we're 16-0 when we out-rebound our opponents by five or more. So for us, the key is we have to defend and rebound at a high level. Going against Alabama is no different. Now that's a taller task. You know, they are number three in the country in overall offensive efficiency and the tempo that they play at. The volume of possessions that they get in the game is going to make it really hard. But we have to hang our hat where we are, and then that's going to be to defend and rebound.
So, Coach, you are playing Nate Oates' Alabama Crimson Tide. They like to drive, dish, shoot the three. They do have some big men, although, you know, luckily one of their professional players is no longer eligible. But you have a tall task ahead of you down in Tampa. What's it going to be like for the next couple of days preparing for a team like that that you're going to play Friday, I believe, at around 3:15?
Yeah, it's a very tall task. I mean, they're a very good team. They're extremely well coached. And we're very familiar with Alabama. I spent a lot of time on the phone with Nate Oates when they were recruiting Aaron Estrada down there.
That's right.
So, you know, obviously Aaron, two-time player of the year here with us, went to Alabama and led them to a Final Four. So very familiar with their system, very familiar with how they play. We watched a ton of Alabama games that year, especially on the run to the Final Four. So, yeah, a lot of respect for them. We know we're going to have to be ready in transition. They're going to shoot a lot of threes. They're going to shoot them quickly. They're going to shoot them with range. So it's not a game where you can relax for a second when you're on the court. When you're on the court, we need total engagement, not just from a physical standpoint, but from a mental standpoint. And we're going to have to do our best to play the game on our terms, not theirs.
Coach, earlier this evening we had Coach Scott Cross from Troy on, and he spoke about the difficulty of keeping everybody focused with all the distractions that come with the NCAA tournament and just all the trappings with it. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, how you plan to keep your guys just focused on the task at hand? And, you know, while you've accomplished a big thing, you still have a lot of work to do, and I'm sure that nobody is thinking that the job is done.
Yeah, it's a really good question, especially in today's landscape when everyone has such accessibility to these players via social media. But, you know, to speak on, like, the mentality which we're trying to create here is that we had a long film session on Saturday just kind of reviewing a lot of the plays, the winning plays that we made that we felt helped lead us to winning the CAA championship. But the last slide, and it just said, so what, now what? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the mentality we're trying to go with. Like, it's awesome. We tried to put a bow on it. We should be really happy. Our guys should be really grateful for this opportunity, but all right, now what are we going to do with the opportunity? And kind of shifting your mindset from, you know, we've had enough time to drink the Kool-Aid. It's a little bit different with us. We won on Tuesday. Some of these other teams that win on Saturday or today, you know, you win and you celebrate and then you're right on to the next thing. We've had our time in the sun here, which has been awesome, but let's refocus and let's get back to work.
Coach, Preston Edmead, a freshman. I'm trying to go to bed the other night, or I'm trying to stay awake, and other people in my house are trying to go to bed. And he takes a huge shot after one of your other players had fouled out. He comes back and puts in 26 in the finals. What is it about this kid as a freshman that he's able to come out there and lead you guys to the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, it says ref says, you know, just onions, man, onions, to be honest with you. He's got him, and for a freshman, calling an innocent rise, maybe he doesn't even know how big the moments are he's playing in. But let me tell you something. He had a great quote after he made that shot on CBS, and he just said, listen, this is what happens when preparation meets opportunity. And he's the first one in the gym. Every single day, I'm out there 45 minutes before practice, and he beats me on the court every day. He's in there in the morning getting his shots up. He's in there at night getting his shots up. He's a really, really hard worker. He comes from a basketball family. I would be lying to you if I said we all weren't a little bit nervous when Cruz Davis fouled out in the semifinals against Towson.
Yeah, that was a weird situation. Yeah.
And then, but, you know, Preston just really stepped up, as did the other guys. Like, listen, Preston and Cruz get a lot of the accolades, and as they should on our team. But, like, we're number four in the country in two-point field goal percentage defense. And our fives, they're like the offensive line. They're the most important guys on the team that just get zero credit. And they defend the rim, they rebound, they set great screens. They're big targets, athletic targets when they're rolling to the rim. So, again, those two get a lot of accolades, and as they should, but we're not just a two-man show.
Nice to see a kid from Deer Park come back to Long Island and help a team out. Expectation for you as an associate head coach, what is it that you focus on the most during tournament time, and maybe how do you and Coach Claxton kind of split up some of the duties for scouting and game planning?
Yeah, so it's a really good question. So my job is I'm the defensive coordinator, so if we don't guard Alabama, you can blame me, okay? So
not many teams have.
Every scout, and speed's great. He gives me a lot of autonomy. We meet on it, with it, and our guys are really bought in. They're the reason why we've been able to really guard this year. They're bought into why that has had such a big piece of our success. And then speed will handle the offense and the overall game plan. And so what we'll do is, you know, we have an assistant coach who's already been assigned to the Alabama scout, and we got two other guys who are assigned to Akron and Texas Tech. You know, in the situation that we win, we're prepared going into that next round.
Coach, you're a graduate of the College of St. Rose, and I used to coach at NYIT well before you were there at St. Rose. But did you play for Coach Brian Brewery?
Of course, yeah. If you played at St. Rose, there's a great chance you played for Bury. He was there for 32 years. So my alma mater is not supposed to happen, but unfortunately, it's shut down.
Perno's a good guy too.
He's the best. Perno's great. So I joke with people all the time that they need to call me Dr. DePauli because no one can check my undergrad records anymore.
What staff is he on now, Bury?
So he's with Siena.
That's what I thought.
We were texting the other night. So, listen, I think Alabama's a tough draw. They just got Duke tonight, so I shouldn't feel too bad about myself and our draw.
Back in our day, when I was there, we played against the likes of Garth Joseph. I'm sure you I don't know if you ever met him, but he was as intimidating as it came. And College of St. Rose, both on the women and the men, and was just such a great place, and it's sad that it's no longer, but anybody who comes from that coaching tree certainly knows what they're doing.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Garth was great. So Garth played in the NBA for a little while, and you know, it was during the time when everyone was trying to get fives to stop Shaq, and it's just kind of funny. Now you look at the NBA and what fives are doing. You know, Anthony Davis is a five in the NBA right now. So it's just amazing how much the game has come in the last 30 years. But, no, Garth was great. Every time he came back, he'd play pickup with us. He'd take the whole team out to eat after. And it was like a celebrity every time he came back to Albany.
Coach, you're the defensive coach, strategy. How much does defense matter in surviving and advancing? And is it important during the game, maybe after a timeout, to come back and switch things up a little bit?
Yeah, so two really good questions. So you know, we say all the time around here, you know, I think offense is like the stock market and defense is like your bonds. And what I mean by that is, you know, offense is going to come and go. It's going to hit highs. It's going to hit lows. And the problem, if you're trying to beat people with that side of the ball, if you have a cold night, you're in a bad spot. where defense is what's going to allow you to win the game every night. Offense determines by how much you win by. And I think this team's been able to show versatility where literally this game, this year we've held people in the 40s and you win a game, I don't know, 56-49. And then the next night you win a game, 82-58 because your offense was really going that night. So I think defense allows you to have a chance every single night. It doesn't mean you're going to win every night, but it gives you a chance to win every single night. And then with your next question about coming out of timeout, so it's funny. My first year here with Speed, we would do that more where we would trap a ball screen, we would throw a possession of zone at someone, just to kind of disrupt whatever the other coach did coming out of a timeout. And then the following year, we just said, no, we're not going to do that. It's not, we're just going to kind of, we're going to trust our scouting in terms of what they typically run on their ATO offense, trust our defensive principles. And the next year we were third in the country in ATO defense. Okay. And since then we've been about top 15, top 20 in ATO defense. And I think sometimes as coaches we outsmart ourselves. And I think it's just, especially in today's landscape where players are in such flux coming in and out of your program, I think it's the old KISS method, you know, keep it simple, stupid. You know, the simpler we can keep it for these kids, it allows them to play hard, fast, and physical. Yep. The more they think, the slower their feet get. So for us, it's really trying to keep it simple so they can play hard, fast, and physical at all times out there defensively.
Talking with Mike DiPaoli of Hofstra University. Coach, last question from me. You had some experience now in the conference tournament, but now going into the NCAAs, as far as how deep you guys go, do you expect to do what you normally did in the regular season, or do you shorten things up a little bit now, except for foul trouble?
Well, yeah, it's funny. You know, Speed, listen, Speed's unbelievable to work for, and he's got so many strengths. I call him Thibodeau Jr., though. You know, listen, our guys play. You know, Cruz Davis is second in the country in minutes. So our bench, listen, we're about eight deep. I don't anticipate anything changing with that, but, you know, the nice thing compared to this tournament, compared to, like, the conference tournament, is this tournament you get a day off in between. Right. During your conference tournament, you're playing back-to-back-to-back in order to get it done. So, we are deeper than that. Like, I think guys will be ready. We may go 90, maybe 10 deep. But I think with Coach Speed, he gets comfortable with guys, and he's going to give them the latitude to play through some mistakes.
Coach, we can't thank you enough for joining us tonight. We wish you all the best, and we know you got a lot of work ahead of you, but safe travels. It says on your website, the pride of Long Island, and you certainly are. And as a Hofstra alum, we wish you all the best, and thanks for doing what you guys are doing.
Nah, man, it's pride is real pride, okay?
All right, absolutely. Good luck. Go get them.
Thank you. Coach Mike DiPaoli, absolutely, associate head coach of Hofstra, and just a great story, and we're going to go on here, Cap, to another great story. We're going to take a 30-second timeout, and then we're going to be joined by Antoine Pettaway from Kennesaw State University.
You're listening to Sports Talk New York. Tune in every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on Long Island's WGBB. Broadcasting on 95.9 FM and 1240 AM. Or listen live online at WGBBRadio.com. Stay connected to Sports Talk New York on WGBB by following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at WGBB Sports Talk. You're listening to Sports Talk New York on Long Island's WGBB. And now, back to the show.
And welcome back to our March Madness special. And right now, we're very lucky to be joined by the head coach of Kennesaw State, the Owls. And they're going dancing as the number 14 seed against number 3 Gonzaga. And that's Antoine Pettaway. Coach Pettaway, thank you so much for joining us. Mike and Chris here up in New York.
Thank you for having me, man. It's a blessing to be on with you guys.
We are excited. A couple of weeks back, we had Coach Mark Gottfried on, and he talked about coming to see you and some other of his former players coach against each other. I forget which player you coached against.
It was Mo Williams at Jackson State.
That's right.
And we were starting backcourt for him.
He is a great guy, and he's so excited to see you do well.
That's my guy. That is my guy, man. He was my coach in college. I was a walk-on. And, knowing the business now, man, just the decision he made to go ahead and have faith in a walk-on, a small one that couldn't shoot, and he started me my senior year, and we were able to go to the Elite Eight. But I'm so forever indebted to what he did for me, the release he had in me when I played for him. Great guy.
So, Coach, your last two regular season games in Conference USA, two tough losses to UTEP and New Mexico State, but then opening game against Western Kentucky, 96-87, you start to get rolling. So tell us a little bit just about how your team has gotten on that roll and how you're gelling at the right time.
Yeah, no, we're playing some of our best basketball right now. I think we won seven out of our last nine games. And, you know, these guys are just, I talk to them about March basketball. Like, it's not about any stats. It's nothing about, it's all about winning. That's all it's about, making winning plays, defending, and then rebounding the ball. And, you know, consistently this year, you know, we've been one of the better rebounding teams in the country that has to travel with us to Portland. And we got to do a great job of playing defense. And if we do that, you know, I think we know we'll have a chance, but we playing some of our best basketball. The guys are really locked in. I got an amazing group of young men. I get to coach. They're really, like, connected. They really love each other. Really have a brotherhood.
Coach, I was looking at the line. I thought maybe you guys be a 15. You wound up being a 14. You're going to play Gonzaga out on the West Coast. Not till late on Thursday night around 10 o'clock Eastern time. You know, what's did you guys think that's approximately where you would be, and what's it going to be like for the next day? I guess you probably have to leave tomorrow, correct?
No, we're going to leave Tuesday. Stands right now. But, yeah, we had no idea where we were going. You know, we're happy to be in his hands, and we're looking to make some noise once we touch down. But we had no idea who we were going to play. We felt like we would be, you know, like you said, 14, one of the two bottom 14 seeds, you know, early 15. And so we were just watching the selection show like everybody else. And when we got the, you know, Gonzaga draw, you know, Mark Few is one of the best coaches. I mean, everybody knows this. He's one of the best coaches in basketball. When I was an assistant at Alabama with NATO, I had you know, the opportunity to play against his team twice, you know, to coach against his team twice. And, you know, always well coached, always very organized. They defend. They don't beat themselves. They don't turn the ball over a lot. Great size around the rim. Just they play the game the right way and present a lot of problems.
Once again, Coach Antoine Petway from the Conference USA champion Kennesaw State Owls joining us here tonight. And, Coach, for those of us out here who maybe haven't seen your team play a lot this year, could you just tell us a little quickly, you know, offensively and defensively, you know, what you're looking to do on a nightly basis?
Yeah, no, we play with pace and space. We're going to push tempo. You know, we're one of the top 20 fastest-playing teams in the country. We want paint touch, and, you know, we emphasize at the rims or, you know, wide open threes, but just the best shot for our team. Defensively, you're going to see guys that we get after. You get up in, you know, in the half court, and we, you know, primarily a man-to-man team. But, you know, we try to get up and pressure the ball, pressure the entry passing, you know, and then, you know, go rebound the ball. We try to win games without toughness on the defensive end, try to out-rebound our opponents and keep guys out of the paint. That's our mentality. But on the offensive standpoint, you're going to see guys play in space, play with a lot of freedom, you know, and just go out there and try to make winning plays.
Coach, you were named the eighth head coach in Kennesaw State history a couple of years back. You guys make the NCAA tournament, and so does South Florida. I hope it doesn't bring up too much emotion, but Amir Abdur-Rahim was in both of those places, and they're going back. Unfortunately, he passed away recently, and both of the teams moving on. Do you feel like that's kind of meant to be?
Oh, of course. To know Amir is to love Amir. He was such a phenomenal coach, but an even better man, even better husband, even better father. And so he left a lasting impact on both of these places he was at. Like, when I got to Kennesaw, man, like, the amount of people that he touched, the amount of people that loved and adored him, and he's from Atlanta. And so it's just deep-rooted love for him and his family. And then he was able to go to South Florida, and in a short time, that whole campus fell in love with who he was as a person. And he took that program to a whole nother level. You know, I think he had a saying, this ain't the same old South Florida. And he transformed that program. And, you know, and now, you know, I think myself and Coach Bryan, we're both reaping some benefits from the seeds he planted.
So, Coach, you start out as an assistant at Jackson State. You move on to Alabama for many years, and now you, as head coach at Kennesaw State, can you just speak a little bit about the difference of taking your own program to the NCAA tournament as opposed to, you know, being an assistant?
Yeah, no, it's just definitely, I hadn't really slept in the last 3 weeks. Like you said, man, every game, you know, has been vital, you know, for us to keep moving on in that Conference USA race to try to get a good seed, and then you get a good seed where you get a bye, and now you got a better route to the championship to get to the tournament. And so, like, it's just, you know, it's more skin in the game, you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
It's more skin and all. Yeah, no, it's definitely been a blessing. And I love, this is what I prayed for when I was at Alabama, learning on the people like Anthony Grant, got a chance to learn on the Nate Oaks, Mark Godfrey, guys like that, Avery Johnson. Like, I wanted to make sure I took the things that I learned from watching them every single day and then add my own deal to it when I got here. I think we've been able to do that. And, you know, it's just a blessing, man, to just, you know, see the work pay off. You know, like, we work extremely hard. We practice extremely hard. And to see these guys playing their best basketball when we need it the most is very gratifying for me.
So what is tonight and the next couple of days going to be like? You know, I'm sure, like you said, not a lot of sleep, a lot of excitement. I'm sure the school is very excited to send you guys off, but you got a lot of work to do, and I'm sure you and your assistants are just going to be, watching tape, burning the midnight oil here for the next couple of days.
Yes, you know, it's scrambled. Like, we gotta get as prepared as we can versus, you know, to go play a really good team. So tonight's going to be video. Tomorrow's going to be video. We're going to practice, start getting going on their scout report, trying to prepare our team. And then on Tuesday, we head out there, and, you know, we'll get a practice in on Wednesday, and then Thursday, shoot around and get ready to go compete. But, you know, these next couple of days, you know, we're going to be definitely in the video room watching, trying to come up with a game plan to go out here and try to, you know, shock the world.
Yeah. Coach, you're on the bus and you're heading to a tournament game. What's the mood like on your bus? What's something different going on about your team?
I don't know what other people do, but my guys probably got their headsets on, their headphones on. I'm listening to music as well. And you know, that's it. Probably there's no television on the way to the game, but you know, we getting locked in, getting in that zone to go ready to go play. We get to the arena, same thing. Guys have their headphones on till we go get ready to warm up, and we take them through scout report stuff again just to give them a refresher right before the game. And, you know, a lot of my team, I think they're mature. Like, they locked in when it's time to play in the game. And so, you know, before the game, on the bus, we're getting in that zone ready to go compete.
Coach, you mentioned at your time in Alabama, you know, a number of different head coaches that you worked under. What was the key to that? Because that generally in you know, changes of head coach and staff, there's a lot of turnover in the assistants as well. But obviously, you know, you had the goods to stay with all those head coaches.
Yeah, no, just a blessing, and just being highly favored, man. Like, I can one reason why all of them did it, but. You know, just being blessed, they all decided to, you know, I was going to be valuable for them going forward, and just super, super blessed to have been able to learn up under those four guys. You know, each one of them are great, great people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I saw their coaching ability, but I also saw how they treated people, and that was super important to me, too.
Well, Coach, we wish you all the best. We can't thank you enough for giving us a few minutes tonight from all the way down in Georgia in Kennesaw State, number 14 taking on number 3, Gonzaga. We wish you all the best, safe travels, and we'll be pulling for you.
Thank you guys so much for having me, man. Go out.
All
absolutely.
Right, good luck,
yes,
Coach.
Sir. Definitely.
Thank you.
Coach Antoine Pedway, just another one of the great coaches we've had on tonight. But we're going to change gears.
Let's
here.
Let's do it.
Yeah, and we're... For the end of our March Madness program, we're going to change gears and talk a little baseball now with the voice of the New York Yankees, Mr. Dave Sims. Dave, Mike and Chris here back in New York. How you doing tonight?
Doing well. Watching the WBC, enjoying it. It's a heck of a show, boy, I'll tell you.
So when you hear Mike and Chris, does it take you back to your days of working at WFAN?
Yeah, I mean, I was on in the afternoon, in the mornings, in early afternoon, and yeah, those guys were on in the afternoon. Yeah, you know, it was
Well,
it's not something that moves me, but
I wouldn't think so, but
we certainly don't purport to be those two guys. We'll tell you that, but so you're in Tampa, I assume, in the hotel tonight.
Yeah, I got here on Wednesday. Okay. The Yankees. They got slobber-knockered earlier today by Detroit. I mean, thank goodness it's exhibition.
And, absolutely.
Hill didn't have his good stuff, couldn't put guys away when he was ahead in the count, and gave up three home runs, and then it was a grand slam late that, not off of him, but it was 12-1. It's one of those games, you know.
Yeah.
You let it go.
Before we get to the baseball end, just from a broadcasting end, both of us, you know, Chris and I have a question for you. So you've been doing this many years. You're one of the best in the business, and you're looking at, you know, this baseball season coming up from March, you know, hopefully all the way almost into November. How do you prepare yourself both physically and mentally for the grind of all these games you're going to do, all the travel, you know, keeping yourself both, you know, sharp physically and mentally? Is there one or two things that you've learned over the years? Just is it getting good sleep, diet, you know, keeping your voice even to the top level? What's the key to be able to do this over these next couple of months for you?
Well, you pretty much asked and answered the question. I mean, I work out a lot and I drink a lot of water. My college days when, you know, you'd have a few cold ones and be able to, you know, have it wear off quickly, those days are long gone.
Yes, sir.
I definitely don't do that. And, you know, just preparation, you know, you're watching everything, trying to read as much as possible, watch as much as possible. So much going on. Not only in baseball, but the entire sports world. I mean, I know I try to, so it was sort of a routine when I was doing sports talk radio, when I was following football, baseball, basketball, hockey, a little golf, sometimes tennis. So it's a singular event now, and, you know, I got, you know, one team I knew cold, and, you know, I've been doing this my 20th consecutive year doing big league baseball. So
wow.
Yeah, I know most of the guys out in the league, you know, in the league, and certainly a lot of the managers and coaches. So, you know, you got people you can talk to and, you know, yeah, ask the right questions and, you know, find out things and then you just get after and have some fun.
Talking with Dave Sims. Dave, you were with the Mariners, you know, back in 2007 full-time, and then, you know, when John Sterling decided to hang it up, the phone call came in. How easy was that for you to return to New York as the Yankees broadcaster?
Well, you know, I mean, come on, it's the Yankees. It's, you know, the jewel of sports franchises in North America, one of the, you know, top two or three sports brands in the world. That was pretty easy. I still live in New York. Worked in Seattle, came home after the season, and, you know, it's a great opportunity, and can I work with Susan Waldman? We go way back, and
yeah.
She's a big advocate for me to get the job, it's worked out well. We're really enjoying it, and would love to get a World Series ring.
So a lot of people thought maybe the Yankees were just running it back this year with pretty much the same lineup, trying to get Garrett Cole back in. Do you think they made enough of the changes in order to get to the next level, or do you think maybe there's a couple of pieces that still need to be changed?
You got, you know, I don't know, everybody's so focused on this. This is still a good team, 94 wins, tied with Toronto for most in the American League, third most wins in baseball. You got just about everybody back. You got Cole coming back in late May, early June. Weathers is a nice pickup in the rotation. I mean, there's some pieces there. The guys that are coming back are good players.
Very good.
And, you know, everybody's very, you know, cynical about Trent Grisham. All right, so maybe he doesn't hit 34 home runs again, but maybe hits 25 and hits 270 and drives in a decent amount of runs and plays a good center field. You know, Bellinger had a great year. Judge, you know, stays healthy and has another month. There's no reason to think that, you know, these guys can't do it, you know, get back to the playoffs and do some damage. And the biggest thing, when you go back and look at last year, you know, the teams that did make the playoffs, like, you know, Detroit, they didn't fare well against Detroit. They went 2-4 against the Tigers. Got outscored 40-18. You know the damage Toronto did. So if you turn some of those numbers around, I mean, they're going to be right where they want to be. And in terms of going out, you know, that's not my money, but there were obviously discussions and, you know, thoughts about what they were going to do and not going to do, and they started to stand pat, and that's not a bad thing. I mean, it's a good team. Come on. I'm not just saying, I would say that if I was still with the Mariners. It's still a good team.
Hey, good teams.
Absolutely. So, Dave, you grew up in Philly, you know, native of that area. As a younger person, did you have that dislike for the New York teams at that point? Were you all in on Philadelphia when you were younger?
Oh, heck yeah. I mean, you know, when I was growing up, I'm still an Eagles fan.
Okay.
And baseball-wise, I mean, I can remember my first World Series. It seemed like every year it was like, a date on the calendar, like Christmas and Thanksgiving and Easter. And, it was Mel Allen. Hi, everybody, Mel Allen. Yeah, World Series time. I admired him. You know, I certainly admired what was going on. And you had to respect it. I mean, they obviously drafted well. They kept players. They developed players. It was a great franchise. I mean, it's a legendary franchise. So, I wasn't growing up in Philly. I wasn't certainly not a Yankee.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
Certainly respect the hell out of them. I mean, the Phillies 1950 team got to the World Series. Yankees beat them in four with DiMaggio and the boys, and I think it was Joe's last or next to last year. And then they let that team grow old in the, through the rest of the 50s. And by the time, I was really aware of what was going on, that was a pretty bad team, and they didn't get good again until 64. Mm. And tragically, that year, they were up 6.5 with 12 to play and blew the lead and lost the pennant.
I'm glad you brought that up and not me.
Everybody, every guy's my age, It's almost like it's a badge of honor as you remember that.
Yeah.
You remember everybody has an epic story about what how they reacted to it when it all fell through.
So obviously, your resume speaks for itself. What was your dream job when you were breaking into broadcasting? What to you was the pinnacle that you wanted to reach?
Well, I just wanted to. I never really got that specific. I just wanted to be a baseball announcer. I wanted to. Be in the big leagues, and Seattle came along, and I had near misses in several other situations, but Seattle came along in 2007, and I jumped all over it.
Yeah.
I think I beat out like 100 guys, and sometimes you can have a dream job, you can dream all you want. As the Stones, Rolling Stones, you say you don't always get what you want.
You're right.
But I got a baseball job, and I did it for 18 years, and was three-time sportscaster of the year in the state of Washington. So it worked. And then, this opportunity came to be, and here I am, year two with the Yankees.
So you have a signature call, hey now, when there's a home run. But if you're in a situation like...
Well, I don't do it all the time. I don't do it all the time. It's got to be a big moment.
It's got to be the moment.
Just, it has to be a defining moment, like a game winner, a game changer, in the case of Seattle, clinching a playoff spot. But yeah, it beats the heck out of a lot of other things I could say.
Yeah. But in 2012, you called Philip Umber's perfect game, and then you called another one 4 months later with Felix Hernandez throwing the first perfect game in Mariners history. First time that a broadcaster did two perfect games in the same season. But are you, like, preparing something as that game is going on, or is it just kind of feeling the moment out?
It's organic. I mean, you try to. I'm a former sports writer at the Daily News, so I know what it's like to write on deadline. And here, instead of putting it on paper, you have to speak it, and you got to cover the essentials: the who, what, when, where, how, and why. And that's what you do. And more often than not, in cases like that, just keep it simple. And I was very fortunate. I think the definition, or certainly the accurate call, is that I'm the only guy TV sportscaster have to call two perfectos in one season, because Rick Riz was on the radio side in Seattle when that happened. But doesn't get me on the subway, but it is a pretty good distinction.
Once again, we're talking with legendary Dave Sims, and we had gotten into the Yankees a little bit, but now we're going to circle back to that, Dave, if that's okay. And you're in Florida, as you mentioned, and now as spring is beginning to wrap up, and the World Baseball Classic has obviously changed the focus here a little bit of what a normal spring training is like. What do you see as a difference, once everybody comes back from this WBC, those guys who've been playing, you know, they've been playing it on this higher level. Will they be rested a little bit, or are they going to jump right back into it? And you know, could you fill us in on what your thoughts are with that?
That's a very good question. There's no roadmap that has been given out to us. But those guys, you know, their edges have been sharpened by this competition.
Oh yes,
I think it's going to be great, and they'll be, you know, they'll give them a blow here, and there's no question about it. And that's one of the great things about the advances in modern science that we've seen over the years, and how important, you know, sleep is for these guys to get their rest. But I think these guys, you know, they adhere to it pretty well. They're not, you know, they're not stupid. They're not foolish. They know how good this team is, and they're not going to do anything to jeopardize it. So I just think that they'll come back with a really good razor-sharp edge, telling great stories about the experience. And, you know, hey, boys, let's tee it up. We got the Giants. We got the Mariners. And then come home, open up the home schedule against Miami. Let's rock and roll.
Absolutely. We had Brad Ausmus on a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about the challenge of managing a team, but also, you know, still staying in touch with the Yankees and you know, doing both jobs. And I'm sure, as you see, you know, players who are coming and going, WBC is important, but really it's about starting the season properly.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, but I do like the fact that, you know, as you watch these games, I mean, and this, the atmosphere, and these guys, these are elite baseball players, and I think from baseball, you know, they're elite guys in terms of how they think and how they, you know, they take care of themselves. So I don't anticipate any break. I mean, physically, you hope everybody stays well, but in terms of the mental approach and just the overall approach and the stories that they're going to be sharing with their teammates, I think it's going to be very exciting for, you know, everybody in baseball.
Last question. You know, it is March Madness. You were the former co-host of Basketball and Beyond with Coach K. What was the best thing about working with Coach K?
He's awesome. He's a funny guy. You know, I've known him for a long time, and you know, we talk honestly. He's got a great heart. He's very smart. He's a very savvy sports fan, big baseball fan, Cub fan. Grew up in Chicago, and the fact that you know, they asked me to, you know, be the guy to do that. I did that for 17 or 18 years. And, you know, with his, you know, with the, you know, the shadow, I don't want to say the shadow, but his image is so good. And he was so successful, everybody wanted to be around him. So we were able to get pretty much anybody in the world of sports and business come on the show and talk about their life and career. So it was a pleasure and an honor to do that show.
Well, Mr. Dave Sims, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Enjoy the season.
Enjoy, and we hope you're broadcasting deep into November. Get that ring.
Yes, sir. You got it. All right, be well, fellas.
Thank you so much.
Have a good night.
Absolutely. You too.
Mike, great show.
Great show. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to Brian Graves, who did an amazing job manning all the calls and different things.
Eight callers in 2 hours.
Unbelievable. Great show, and we'll try to top it next year.
This is WGBB AM 1240. 240 GFFM, 95.9 Freeport, New York.